Well, I think if you live long enough, death is going to come to your house. And some of us get a little earlier experience of it than others do. And such was the case with my two boys. I have the elder son, Mac, Mac is very sensitive, and he is very dramatic, sometimes melodramatic. He sees a chance to emote in any given situation. And then you have our younger child, Ian, who is far more practical. He sees things as they are and calls the shots as he sees them. It just so happened that the lady who had raised me and my sister and my brother, the one who instilled in me a love of cooking and feeding people, she had taken care of four generations of our family, my grandparents, my parents, me, and then my two boys. And the time came for Alice to be gathered under her father's and mother's. And so we went to the funeral home, and I had the boys with me, and Alice was in the casket, beautifully made up, and looked like she might just sit up and say, "What in the world is going on here?" And so Mac was standing beside me, and Ian was in my arm. And the people came by and offered their condolences and looked at Alice and said the obligatory, "Doesn't she look natural? Looks just like herself." And Mac was caught up in the moment, and he said to Ian, Alice has gone to sleep, and she's not going to wake up." And Ian looked at Mac, and he looked at Alice, and he looked at Mac, and he looked at Alice, and he looked at Mac, and he said, "Mac, Alice is dead." From the lips of a four-year-old comes truth. Alice was dead. She was surely dead. As we used to say in the hospital, she had assumed room temperature. And there she was. And Mac and Ian were both right. She had indeed fallen asleep and was not going to wake up on this side of Jordan Stream. And she was indeed dead can be. If you ever have any questions about that, I recommend to you Jessica Mitford's book, The American Way of Death. It was a 1960s expose of the funeral industry, and it goes into great and gory detail about the preparation and the marketing of funerals. If you don't want to read that book, I will understand it. But here is Lazarus. Lazarus is dead. 4 days he has been in the grave. In Jewish tradition, it was believed that after 3 days, the spirit left the body. And after the third day, there was no hope of anyone ever coming back. So it is significant that it was 4 days, Lazarus in the tomb, and as Mary or Martha, one of them, notices, when Jesus says to open the tomb, they say, let's not. There might be a stench. There's already a stench. I always loved the King James Version of that because it made my grandmother so mad. She said, "Lord, he hath lain in the tomb for 4 days, therefore he stinketh." Grandmother thought stink was an ugly word. So I rejoiced whenever this passage came around because I'd watch Grandmama kind of squirm. She didn't believe the authors of the Bible should have included that word in Holy Writ. So Lazarus is dead, and Mary and Martha are beside themselves. And they're not a little bit angry at Jesus. They had sent word to him that Lazarus was sick. And they both believe, had he been there, Lazarus would not have died. We have a hard time with people who are angry at God. We feel a need sometimes to protect God. You should never be angry at God, my mother told me. That is an automatic go to hell. That's what she said. Go to hell, go directly to hell, do not pass go, do not collect $200. You get mad at God, God gets mad back at you, and bad things happen. That was her belief. And yet here in this passage, we see Jesus dealing graciously with Mary and Martha. You know, the word love is mentioned three times in this passage. And often when the word love is placed in a passage, it is a pivot point where something else is going to happen. But in this case, love is an anchor point because it is the love of Jesus for Mary and Martha and Lazarus that causes Jesus, first of all, to be there. Second of all, to console Mary and Martha. And only third of all, to raise Lazarus. Mary and Martha, we remember them from the story where Mary is angry, or is it Martha? I never can keep those two straight in my mind. It's a sign of my longevity. But one of them is working hard in the kitchen and says, Lord, send my sister in here. Somebody has got to put on the pot roast. And the other one was in there listening to Jesus. And that just made the first one so mad. And Jesus said, no, she's got the better part. And I'm not going to take it from her. These are those same two sisters, two personalities diametrically opposed to each other, and yet they are united in their grief. And Martha meets Jesus out on the road. If you'd been here, if only you'd been here. Have you ever noticed how much of our lives are built around the if-onlys of life? If only I'd gotten that job. If only that person had cooperated. If only God had answered my prayers the way I told God to answer them. If onlys. And Jesus does not entertain that at all. Jesus doesn't operate out of if onlys. Jesus operates out of love and wisdom and providence. Then Martha sends back for Mary, tells her, the teacher's here, and he's calling for you. And you notice Jesus didn't move from where he met Martha. Stayed right there. Let Mary come at her own pace, in her own time. And she came to Jesus and said that same thing. Lord, if only you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. There's that if only again. And Jesus asks both of them, do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe that your brother will rise again? And they both kind of tout the party line. Yes, we believe that in the general resurrection of the dead, he's going to come forth. And then Jesus says to Martha, I am the resurrection. What you don't understand is that what you were looking for at some point in the sweet by and by when you glory and die, then you're going to rise. But no, this is going to happen because I am the resurrection. And the whole crowd is there now. Mary brings all the Jews, as they say, from the house, who are weeping and wailing and gnashing their teeth, and they are all gathered around. And Jesus said, "Where did you lay him?" And they're all crying. And Jesus participates in the emotion, even though he knows what's going to happen. He loves them so much, he weeps with them. Compassion, the compassion of Christ. I wonder if we can envision at our lowest points, when we were weeping with grief or despair or pain, if we could envision Christ weeping with us, it is a powerful symbol. I remember many years ago, I had my first crush. Her name was Patty Hollis. The Patty Hollis Social Club was at the Northside Drive Baptist Church, and she would only date a Baptist, and I went and got dunked so that I could be the recipient of her affections. And after I was baptized, my hair was still wet. It was still present back then. She dropped me like a hot potato, said she detected residual Calvinism in me. And then I found out that was her evangelism style. Go out and meet a boy, bring him to church, get him baptized, go out and get another one. The Patty Hollis Social Club, we all sat on the back pews of the Northside Drive Baptist Church. All of us forlorn. But that Sunday I was in my room, and I was weeping, literally weeping, crushed in spirit. And my mother came in, and she didn't just start saying, "Oh, there's more fish in the sea, you know," and all that kind of stuff. She sat there and she wept with me, because even though she knew I would survive that, she felt the pain that was mine. And it caused her to weep also. That's the dynamic that we have when Jesus weeps with us. And we don't think about that too often. The compassion of Christ. Then Jesus says, "Where have you laid him? Where is he?" And we know the rest of the story. Jesus stands outside after they've rolled the stone away, and he says, "Lazarus, come forth." And you can almost see, like a B movie, this wrapped up figure, bound hand and foot, wandering out, the cloth over his face. And all of a sudden, the circulation has been restored. And the organs are functioning and the muscles are contracting. And here he comes. Probably somewhat dazed. Maybe a little disappointed. He'd been in heaven for 4 days. But there he was. Now Lazarus died again. We don't have the particulars. We don't hear about Lazarus after that. But we do know pretty surely that Lazarus once again assumed room temperature, as did Mary and Martha. And I like to think that somewhere up in heaven, the family is still there. Mary and Martha and Lazarus, remembering the old times, remembering the back winds. And Jesus sitting there with them, Jesus saying, "Boy, that was a day. That was a grand day. We went from the depths of despair to the highest joys there are." And you know, the whole human document is enclosed right there. The reality of death the promise of the resurrection and the glory of new life. You see, death does not have the final word. For those of us who are believers, we know that death does not have the final say. Jesus was about the business of resurrection. In addition to Lazarus, there was the son of the widow of Nain. There was the son of Jairus, not the daughter of Jairus. Jesus is about resurrection, and it is a sign of the kingdom that new life abounds. Let us always give thanks to God when death does not have the final word. Amen.